Welcome to the Nail It to a Cross Day Hippie Punk Easter Special. I've got Mark Passio here. I've got loads of questions for him. Welcome, everybody, and thank you. A big thank you to Mike Tournier for doing that jingle for me. It rocks. It's great. And the kids love it too, and it's their voices in there. So, yeah, all good with that one. Thank you, Mike. So, let's get on. Mark, how are you doing?
Libby, I'm doing great today. Thanks so much for inviting me on to your show.
No, thank you for coming. It's an absolute pleasure and honour to have you here. I'd just like to say, first of all, the reason that I asked you was because I watched your video on natural law, and the way that you present your information just struck a chord with me, the way that you talk to people, the way that you just tell them how it is. And if they don't like it, good luck with that. Do you know what I mean? And that was what really inspired me about you. So that's why I've asked you to come on the show.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, I have a kind of a straightforward approach, a no-nonsense approach, and it works well for me. Some other people tend to get a little bit upset or offended by it, and that's okay. Everybody will hear the truth in their own time, or they won't, and they'll suffer as a result. But I'm going to put it out there as it is, because that's the job that I'm tasked to do.
Yeah, sure. Brilliant. That's what I really liked about you. And then somebody did ask me today, do you think you could ask him about his delivery? And I was like, no, that's what's great about him. So anyway, let's go straight into it.
First of all,
brief intro about yourself. You were a priest in the Church of Satan. Is that right?
Yes, I got involved in dark occultism for many years in my youth, and recognized eventually over time that it was a group of individuals who weren't just working with occulted information about how the human psyche works and the motivations of people work just for their own benefit in their personal lives, but they were really working together as an interconnected hierarchical network throughout the world to essentially enslave humanity. When I really understood that that's what it was about at a much deeper fundamental level, my conscience wouldn't allow me to proceed further down that path, which many Satanists refer to as the left-hand path. And my conscience, basically started coming back to me, and I realized that I had to start exposing this. I had to cease my involvement in these groups and with these people, and I had to start informing people that these dark occultists had essentially infiltrated every institution on the face of the earth and had key people in as point men and women in placements in positions of power and influence in every social institution of humanity. And that's what I've really been doing ever since I've left those organizations.
Well, good for you for exposing it. So how would you say that the Church of Satan is connected to Freemasonry, and why is it that most Satanists are, and what's the link with the OTO?
Okay, well, all of these different groups don't necessarily share like very strict bonds as far as their on the surface interconnections go. However, what I would say is that Satanists and dark occultists in general have infiltrated a lot of these organizations and are steering them. What I should do first is delineate by what I mean by occultism versus dark occultism. The word occult, of course, simply means hidden. It does not mean evil or bad or negative. It refers to hidden knowledge. It comes from the Latin. The word occult in English comes from the Latin occultare, a verb in Latin, which means to hide, to conceal, to keep secret, to veil from sight. So all occulted information is information which is being kept secret so that it can be used as a power differential over people who are kept in ignorance of it. So if you know a whole lot about how psychology works, you can manipulate people who are ignorant about how psychology works with that knowledge. If you know how to do basic arithmetic and somebody doesn't know how to do basic arithmetic, you could probably beat them for a fair sum of money if they don't understand, you know, how to add and subtract. Okay. So knowledge can be converted into power. It isn't power in and of itself, but how it is used can be converted into a power differential. That's what dark occultists do with occult knowledge. They use it to wield power over other people who are in ignorance of that knowledge, which they happen to understand. There is another form of occultism, which would be using previously hidden knowledge for spiritual uplift of other people. okay, for expansion of consciousness. That, however, is what I would refer to as de-occultism, because what you're really doing is you're taking knowledge that had previously been hidden in order to preserve it during very draconian time periods, okay? And the reason people did that is because if they came out with it out in the open, they might be killed, murdered in horrific ways, or the information would completely be destroyed in addition to their own deaths. So in order to preserve it until the times were at least free enough where they could bring this knowledge out into the open, that knowledge was kept hidden by them as well. So that would be what I would call a positive usage of occulted knowledge. It's yes, those mystery traditions or schools of occultism were still hiding that knowledge, but there was a valid reason for it being hidden during those times. Today, there is no valid reason for hiding hidden knowledge and information, because we are living in times which are at least not so draconian that we can't come forward and speak this information to other people and share it with other people. So as a result, I tend to refer to myself now as one who de-occults previously hidden knowledge. I consider myself a de-occultist. Going back to your question regarding the interconnections between some of these organizations, I would say that there is an original intent of a tradition like Freemasonry, which I have really meticulously attempted to explain on my own radio show, What on Earth is Happening. You can go back into the archives and check out all the work that I did explaining what real, true, esoteric, original Freemasonry really is, and what the symbolism that is encoded into this allegorical tradition really means. And unfortunately, this organization, along with many other schools of teaching, have, and that's what Freemasonry was really supposed to be, a school of moral teaching in its original intent. It has fallen horribly off of that path because it has become an organization that has a whole lot of power and money and influence, and it's acting as a man's club whereby very rich and influential individuals basically share favors amongst each other and then pass agendas through, often in secrecy and in dealing only with others of their brotherhood. And it is, morphed into something which it was never really originally intended to be. I would suggest that that is due to the interconnections that have come forward over time with dark occultism in these schools. Again, they recognized that the need for secrecy was a breeding ground, was a perfect environment for their infiltration. And as such, they've come in and taken over these organizations over time. So I look at all earthly lodge systems as being infiltrated at some level, whether it simply be by the watering down of that knowledge and people not really teaching the true original intent of the tradition, whether through no fault of their own, just by receiving bad information and then propagating it. In that sense, some of these traditions have been watered down, not by evil intent or deliberate intent, but many of them have been taken over deliberately and are actively under the control of dark occultists. So that's why I really don't think anybody should be getting involved in earthly lodge systems. That's why I'm not an active member of any earthly lodge or mystery tradition system that is operating on the earth with people in it. There's knowledge out there. It is available to us. If we go out and take it, we can receive it into ourselves. We can integrate it. We can understand it. And then we could employ it in the world. That information is not hidden anymore. It is open to the public at their fingertips if they so desire it. And you can self-initiate yourself into any ancient tradition of occult knowledge in the modern day simply by going online and seeking out that information. And it is there, and you can receive it, and you can understand it, and then put it to use actively in your life. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, that's the conclusion that I came to when I went through my waking up and I was seeking knowledge. And did I have to become a Rosicrucian, or did I have to become this to get that knowledge? And then, no, I realized I didn't. But what I have come to learn is that there's a difference in the Freemasonry about, in some of the lodges, it's around the 33 degree mark. Anything after the 33 degrees, it becomes, the knowledge becomes cosmic rather than earthly. So, that that knowledge, I think, is highly interesting. So, do you know anything about that knowledge?
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. And these are what would be referred to as clandestine degrees, personal degrees, or illuminated degrees. It is the degrees, the 13 degrees after the 32nd degree. So, I consider that there are 45 degrees within Freemasonry, which splits the square. And that's why there's 45. That's the angle, if you put the square on its point, that you ascend directly to the apex of the compasses and the symbol of the compasses and square. Hence, 13 degrees after 32 makes that 45 degree angle, which is a sacred angle.
Is
The
that
information that would be encoded into these degrees is the deep knowledge of natural law. And then you have the application of that knowledge either for attempting to become God here on earth and try to control others by secreting that knowledge and dissuading them from looking into it, which is what I would call dark masonry, or simply another form of dark occultism, dark Luciferianism, etc. Or are you going to actually share that knowledge, share that light, take it to others in a free and open way so that they can understand it and integrate it and then act upon it in their lives, in which case you're using that knowledge for the spiritual uplift of your fellow beings and your community. In which case I would consider that to be a truly illuminated form of positive, or what I would just simply call light Freemasonry. I consider that there are two forms in all occult schools. There is light and dark Kabbalistic tradition. There is light and dark Rosicrucianism. There is light and dark alchemical tradition. There is light and dark Freemasonry. It is all knowledge and how it is used. Knowledge, you could consider like a technology that you put into practice through your behavior with the mind. And you could use a hammer as an example to simply murder somebody that you don't like, or just, want to take something from. Or you could use a hammer along with other tools to build a shelter for the homeless. It is the intent that lies behind the technology or the information that actually gives it its characteristics, that gives it whether it's creating order or chaos, whether it's creating goodness or evil in the world. So, that's the thing people have to really understand about occult knowledge. It isn't one thing. That would be a very unidimensional way of looking at it. It is how it is used that gives it its character, and that is determined by the consciousness that wields that knowledge.
Okay, so when the Freemasons say to each other, "Do you walk your square?" That's why they're saying that, because of what you've just explained with the angles and the 13 and the 33.
Yeah, it's
Am I
part of that allegorical system of symbolism, which again is originally intended to teach natural law and to teach morality. It was originally intended to be a system of morality that was communicated not through direct teaching, but through ritual, allegory, and symbol.
Yeah, thank you. So
Again, it in the modern world, has it fallen from that path? Absolutely, and horribly. The lodge system is still in a complete state of disarray, and in many cases are not teaching the original teachings of Freemasonry whatsoever within the lodge. They're certainly not making sure that their adherents or acolytes that come into the lodge system are really learning that information or that knowledge. They're simply collecting dues, making a whole lot of money, and then doing a whole lot of internal deals and trading amongst each other. And that's what it's become. It's become a big club for businessmen and powerful and influential people in our society that are deeply entrenched in ego and don't really care about the teachings of true Freemasonry, and in many cases don't know them themselves.
Well, I mean, the way I see the Freemasons is that I kind of term it myself as like Illuminati, which are kind of the good guys, and Illuminazi, which are the bad guys.
I like that. Yeah,
That's the
because
other
people have to stop using this term Illuminati to describe the controllers. They're nothing of the kind. They're not illuminated at all. They're not enlightened at all. They have the dark sun, the dark side of the light. That's knowledge without true care. That's knowledge, and then your will to use it to control. But that doesn't involve care. So that's missing one of the most important integrated components of consciousness: emotion, care, empathy for others, compassion. Therefore, they're not illuminated whatsoever. So we should stop calling them that. The people who are truly illuminated and truly enlightened are the real Illuminati. People listening to a broadcast like this are the real Illuminati, not these sick psychopathic controllers.
Sure. So do you know, is it the Book of Law by Crowley? Is it still used on the lectern in a lot of Masonic lodges, do you know?
I'm not really sure because, again, I don't take part in any Masonic ceremonies, rituals, or lodge systems. So I have never heard anyone tell me that who I do know who are active Masons that Crowley's system of Thelema is being actively used within the lodge system. So I can't say that I can't confirm that personally, but it wouldn't surprise me if certain lodges have slight bents toward different philosophies like Rosicrucianism or Thelema or something like that. I personally, again, have a controversial take on Crowley. A lot of people also see him as one way. And I have tried to explain many times on different shows to people that Crowley was channeling information, and a lot of the information that he penned was not really coming from his own ego, was not really coming from his own mind. He was acting as a conduit or a channel for higher level spiritual knowledge. You could actually even see this in his writing. It's switching on and off. And you could see the egoic Crowley coming in, and then you could see these other dimensions of awareness and consciousness that he was tapping into, probably through the use of certain substances and meditative practices as well. So Crowley is certainly an enigma that that requires a lot of discernment to read his writings properly and to understand that there's a wealth of spiritual knowledge within them, but there's also a great deal of ego contained in those writings. And the student has to make that determination through a discernment as to when the channel is on and when it is off, so to speak. So I think there's a lot to be gained from a lot of the writings of Crowley as long as that type of discernment is applied.
Yeah, I'm with you on that as well. I found some of his information quite interesting and intriguing. However, yeah, you're right about the discernment. Absolutely. I think discernment needs to be used everywhere in where we are at the moment,
Right,
because it seems, especially in the New Age thing, but we'll come on to that in a minute.
sure.
So again, with the royals and the elite, I mean, I don't really like calling them, I call them the they,
Right.
because I don't want to give them any power really. So the they. Are they the very, I mean, let's say the royal family and the very high-end elites, just to clarify, are they using Satanism? Are you aware of that? And would you say that high end of Freemasonry, because I know that a lot of the royals are I mean, they're all, I mean, Prince Charles is a Freemason, the Queen's a Freemason, so it is all connected, definitely, yeah?
I would say without a doubt, these people are dark occultists at the highest levels, within so-called royalty. And their, bloodline connection, is what really has established them and had established their ancestry in these positions of power. And, that is because this system of kingship was actually handed down to humanity. It was handed down in the ancient world by, the beings that had to do with our origins as a species. I get into that a lot in my cosmic abandonment, lecture, and I'm going to be talking about this a whole lot more on my own radio show on What on Earth is Happening, every Saturday evening. But, essentially we receive this as a, we receive this system of kingship and authority and government as a byproduct of what was known as the divine right of ancient kings, which had to do with them having more non-human intelligent DNA within their actual genetic makeup than other people because of interbreeding that had gone on between non-human entities and human beings. So, that's where this whole idea that their blood was special even came from. And these other beings basically put them in charge to manage the farm here, so to speak, to essentially manage the human herd. And, because they looked more human than the, other, beings that had come here in the ancient past, they, were more basically, adapted, you could say, to performing the job of the administrator of the farm, because the humans were more likely to listen to them without rebelling, since they shared more physical characteristic traits with them. And again, they delineated themselves and distinguished themselves by their genetics, which they said was closer to the gods' genetics than the average human being. And that's what gave them the divine right to rule. Certainly, the knowledge of our true origins is constitutes the occult that is contained within the information that is hidden, that it has been occulted. But even that hasn't really been hidden with sufficiency to keep it suppressed forever. And that information is out there in very fragmented, stories and fragmented ways. But if one does their due diligence, they can put together that fragmentary puzzle and see the big picture for what it really is and understand that humanity has never been free, and we've always been controlled by these psychopathic lunatics that consider themselves gods. It's never been legitimate. We need to stop euphemizing it and calling it things like government. It's called slavery, ladies and gentlemen, and there's no such thing as legitimate slavery. And people need to stop believing in it, and they need to put it down by whatever means necessary to put it down. Slavery has to be ended, and that's what the spiritual mission of humanity is to perform, to free itself by an act of our will from the bondage of slavery here on earth. And we are going to do that. This system is not going to stand unchallenged, not without consequence, not without a struggle that the whole universe is going to pay attention to. We're going to get the whole attention, not only of the galaxy, but we're going to get the whole attention of the universe by the amount of resistance that is going to be employed to end this system of slavery here on this planet. Bank on it.
When do you think that's going to happen?
It's already happening. It's already underway. And the energy is just ramping up and becoming more and more and more and more intense. And I think a lot of the people out there can feel it. I know that I can. I can feel it. It's coming, you know, and when it comes, it's going to be, and see, there would be a much better way of doing this. But unfortunately, we don't have the power in the minds of other people right now. They're still so asleep. They're still so resistant, but we're slowly reaching more and more and more and more and more of them. And more are coming out of the mind control trance. And there are actual physical warriors here, not soldiers, but real warriors. The big difference between a soldier and a warrior is a soldier fights because he's commanded to fight and doesn't even really know why he's fighting. He's sold out. He's paid. See, that's why he sold his eye, himself, him or herself. Sold I-er. Just think about just that occultic green language, that symbolic language right there in the word, okay? One who has sold their identity, their I, themselves, right encoded into the word soldier. It couldn't be more perfect, you know?
I call them soul dyers.
That's another thing. Their soul has died because they've sold themselves, you know? You're fighting for an agenda that is about enslavement. What could kill the soul any more than that, you know? Soldiers have never been warriors. Soldiers have never been heroes. Soldiers have never been moral, ever. Not one, ever. Okay. A warrior, however, is altogether different than a soldier. A warrior doesn't fight because he's told to fight or commanded to fight. A warrior fights because he knows that the battle is just. That's why a warrior fights. Out of his own free will, he is willing, not because he's being given orders, not because he's being commanded by anybody else. The warrior puts his life on the line out of his own free will because he knows from the definitive knowledge of right and wrong that the action he's performing is right and that what he's standing up against is chaotic evil in his midst. That's what a true warrior is. And let me tell you something. There are lots of warriors on the earth at this time.
Yeah, I know that. I can feel that. Absolutely. I mean, I'd say I'm a warrior, definitely. And the work that I've done, it's because I feel compelled, you know, and I think, I mean, I have two small children. If I didn't have children, I'd be out there a lot more, but I have to do the motherly thing as well. But I know that what I feel is right, and I'm compelled to talk to people. I'm compelled to sow these seeds. And just in the small town where I live, I know that I've woken up quite a few people just by talking. So, you know. Right.
That's how truth is propagated through our voice. We are the vehicles by which the truth operates in our world. We need to speak it into existence. It doesn't have a voice of its own. It's always there. It's always present. It can never be destroyed, but we have to speak it to others so that they can understand it and integrate it so that they can realize it. That's how it's done, by speaking it to other people.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to jump ahead in my questions a little bit because we're connected here as well. With the New Age stuff, When I first got into spirituality, and New Age was the first thing that was put to me, and some of it I found very useful, and some of it I've just sort of thrown away because it appeared to me to be a load of bullshit anyway. So, I mean, I'm quite good at discerning through religions and what have you. I mean, my father was involved heavily with the Christian church and what have you. And when I was a young person, he said to me, when you go traveling, explore all the different religions in the countries that you're in, and because you can't call yourself an atheist until you've explored all the religions. So I took that on board, and I did do that when I was traveling. So New Age came to me, and I'd just like to bust a few myths that the New Age put towards you. So say when you get angry, you know, let's use road rage as an example. Somebody cuts you up and you give them a finger, or you go, you're fucking twat, or whatever. Is that then a negative thought or process that we're putting out into the universe? Or can we squash a mosquito? Can we kill a mosquito? Or is that, again, a murder of a living being, and we shouldn't be killing any little bugs or anything like that? Do you know the answers to that?
Yeah, I would say regarding road rage, I do consider that a negative form of anger, because it doesn't really accomplish anything in the present moment. And it's not really a situation where you're feeling righteous indignation. I mean, you could be annoyed at someone's inconsiderate driving. I'm not saying don't ever feel that emotion, but to feel any kind of deep anger or rage about it is just going to interfere with your ability to drive logically and defensively as well. So I don't consider road rage what I would call a form of righteous indignation. I would say that that's pretty much unchanneled anger that you're not really going to put to any effective use, certainly not in that circumstance. What I call a positive form of anger that the New Age community would tell people is supposed to be somehow completely suppressed or purged in our lives is righteous indignation, righteous anger. See, the New Age movement trying to tell people all forms of anger are negative, quote unquote, and they all need to be purged. And there's no righteous way of feeling anger and using it and employing it in your life for something good. This is false. This is a false teaching. It's a false spiritual teaching. Anybody that has bought into this teaching has been actually robbed and deprived of something that is fundamental to the human emotional makeup: righteous anger, righteous indignation. And I feel sorry for anyone who thinks like this, because they are literally incomplete. Something has actually been diminished in them that should be there, has been removed in them that should be there. So non-righteous and unchanneled anger, I'm agreeing, is completely counterproductive. All right. We don't want to have, absolutely useless forms of negative energy flowing through us. All right. Which is, you know, that would be like, getting angry at other people because, this person, I think they look better than me, or I like the way I like their clothes that they have, or the possessions that they have, or I just don't like this person. He's different than me and I'm going to bully him. You know, of course, these are negative forms of anger and they're counterproductive. They create divide and conquer amongst the people. But there is a positive form of anger, and that is righteous indignation. When we feel anger over injustice that is taking place around us, when we feel anger because someone is doing wrongful actions to other people around us and ourselves, when we feel anger because rights are being stripped away from people that no one else has the right to take because they're not the giver of anybody's rights, okay? Rights are an inherent birthright that we come into as our birthright in creation. Okay. When we feel these forms of anger because we're witnessing things that are morally wrong going on around us by some other people's free will behavioral choice, they're willfully choosing to continue to conduct immoral behavior. That is a positive form of anger called righteous indignation. And I'm not telling anybody just to continue to feel that, because that's going to build up and build up and build up. And if you're not doing anything with it, there's no purpose for letting that build up. And it's like, you know, putting energy into a dam that's eventually going to burst. Okay. And then it's going to explode in non-productive ways. But if we feel that righteous indignation within ourselves as we are intended to, that's what that emotion of anger is for. And then we use that anger to motivate ourselves, to allow it to flow in us temporarily, not permanently, not keep it there. Okay. But we feel it And we say, there's a reason I feel like this. I am supposed to feel this. When you watch a video of police brutality on a YouTube channel or a YouTube video, you are, the proper emotional response to that is anger. If you don't feel that, there is something wrong with you. Now, again, I wouldn't tell people just go and continue to watch police brutality videos because it's going to put you in a horrific mood during the course of the day. That's why I really don't even, I know what's going on. I've made myself aware and I don't keep continuing to expose myself to it endlessly because I don't need any more examples of, you know, that the police are evil people right now in our world. They're not good. They're not doing anything that is just. They're not serving the people. They're not protecting the people. They're serving corporate interests. They're serving the political elites' interests, so-called elites. They're not the elite of anything. They're trash is what they really are. And these people are their henchmen pets that go along and follow their orders to secure whatever resources their masters claim that they want and have a right to when they have no right to anything like that. Okay. And that's all these people are. They're armed animals, armed animals. They're thugs. They're criminals. They're armed animal thug criminal pets of people who couldn't give a damn about them and mock them at every turn and every opportunity. For more on that, you could see my video called The Occult Mockery of Military and Police Personnel. And you'll understand how they're ritualistically and symbolically mocked at every turn by the people who are their owners. But to go back to this righteous indignation concept, when you use the anger that you feel as a result of witnessing injustice taking place around you, because you know it's immoral and it needs to be terminated, it needs to be stopped from being conducted, that's going to create major motivation within your psyche, within your person, to go out and get actively involved, activism, to take action, to create real, positive, lasting change in the world. Not to just wish it, you know, or say, oh, I want this to change, but to actually go out and make the change happen by an act of willpower. See, this is what's completely ignored by the New Age community. It's all about just thinking and feeling something. But then when it comes to actually making it happen, oh, we need to back off. We don't want to use that masculine force. You know, this is all just about the feminine forces, the New Age. We can't actively apply willpower to actually accomplish and get something done in the real world. Action is continuously, the masculine aspect of consciousness, action is continuously downplayed in this religion. And that's why I call it the religion of slavery, the religion of standing down and not taking any action, the religion of submission, the religion of acceptance. Accept all the evil that's taking place around you. Don't do anything about it. Don't do anything about it. No, meditate. Meditate. Sit in a corner and meditate. That's gonna stop all the evil people from doing the behaviors that they're doing. Yeah, maybe we should have meditated away the Nazis. You know, they weren't a committed religion, a dark religion based on dark occultism that was going to demolish everything in their path and enslave the world. No, we should have just meditated them away. That's a real great idea.
Nice one. But are you aware or do you know anything about Carlos Castaneda and his teachings?
Yeah, actually quite a bit. He really kind of started me on the path to getting out of the satanic mindset. I think without reading his books in the early days of my personal awakening, I don't know if I would have awoken to the extent that I have. I know that's another controversial statement because a lot of people give him flack for kind of presenting an allegorical tale as real. I have no problem with the way he presented his books. I consider them very deeply, powerfully transformative allegorical works of fiction. However, there is real philosophy within them regarding shamanism, shamanic techniques, and most certainly good information regarding, you know, how a true shaman as compared to a sorcerer would deal with a sorcerer mentality or a psychopathic personality, you know, how to deal with psychopaths in our world. I think there's good information when it comes to that. And I think there's also really great information in Castaneda's philosophy and his books regarding poisoned worldview and how we have taken on the mindset that the dominators want us to espouse and take on so that we're more easily controllable and we can more easily serve as their batteries, their fuel source to accomplish their covert agendas.
Okay. I mean, I got into Carlos Castaneda. I found the first book and the third book very confusing, but then the second and the fourth book kind of translate what was going on. So then I was able to continue reading them. But yeah, I found them absolutely mind-bending. And I actually interviewed a woman on here last year who lives in the Nagual, and I mean, she's a fantastic character. And she goes out to America and does all sorts of training in the Carlos Castaneda form of shamanism. So yeah, brilliant stuff. Right, I've just had a message come in, and it says, Libby, please can you point out to Mark that we have an ex-32nd degree Freemason broadcasting here every Friday night, who kindly stepped aside tonight. Thank you very much, James. And for the first time ever, he was going to broadcast a recording of a court case from inside a Freemason's lodge. So I've got to say thank you to him. So big thank you to him. Thank you, James, for stepping aside. And yeah, I just needed to mention that. So Mark should interview him, in fact, is what it says at the board. It says at the bottom. So right, Vim, we'll try and get those two together. I think this is quite a good point to bring in Carl, and let's introduce Carl and the information that he's got. Stephen, could you try and get Carl on the line, please, for us?
I sure can.
Carl has been doing some research into the New Age thing. Again, I think you sparked him off onto a lot of things, and he started digging and doing a lot of research. Now, there was an event that happened in London last weekend, which I was invited to come and play music at, but it ended up that it was going to cost me £600, so I declined. But I know one of the other hosts from this station, he went along, and then he did a show about it and was trying to expose what was going on there. Now, what had happened is the actual event ended up splitting into two camps, and some of them went off and did their own event. And from the outside, it all looks very nice, and that there's good information there, and lots of speakers are going to be there. But then, as it turns out, it's all got a bit of a dark edge to it. So, Carl, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you loud and clear.
Yeah.
So, do you want to explain what went on with your investigations into the New Age?
Yeah, basically, hi, Mark. Nice to talk to you.
Hi, Carl.
Thanks for giving my head a wobble with regards to the New Age movement. basically, I've been involved in a lot of evictions, preventing the bailiffs, you know, coming to take people's homes for foreclosures.
Right.
There's been a lot of work going on in the background, people taking on the fight in the courts. In this country, nobody has ever won a foreclosure case against the banks ever. And it's there's a wrong going on there with the banks creating money out of thin air that, you know, people are trying to take to the top in the courts. Now, what people are doing is they're putting videos out on the internet showing the victories with the bailiffs, but they're not putting out the information when the bailiffs come the third or the fourth time and kick these people out and make them homeless. So they're encouraging other people to go and do this, not fully aware of the consequences that might happen, that they will lose the home in the end. And, you know, that's a wrong that they're doing. They're not being fully transparent what they're doing. So this group called the OPPT, the One People's Public Trust, have put these filings out for people to go and hand into courts to, you know, fight the bailiffs. And it's full of New Age woo-woo in the filings. The next thing, they're promoting this girl with a free energy device, quantum energy generator, Hope Moore, the name is, and basically she's done $70,000 in crowdfunding over the last 12 months to try and give this free energy device to the world. And it's basically, it's a bastardization of some Tesla patent that they've done to do this with the world. And she's been around the world giving this free energy device to people now for about a year. And all these, there's a few 10-minute videos of this, you know, this device powering something. And that's all there is. So when anybody asks any questions as to whether, you know, how long will it run for and how many things can it power, they just say, download the schematics, buy the parts, build it yourself. Now, you have to go through this girl to get the parts. So it's like a Nasara type prosperity scheme that they're running on people to extract money via donations. And last week, the New Earth Project, or the new, sorry, I forgot the name of them, the New
Humanity, and then the New Earth was the split off, wasn't it?
Gave this girl a plat-
Lost him. Carl, are you there?
Can you hear me? Hello?
Yeah, you're back with us. You went silent for a moment.
Can you hear me? Sorry, yeah?
Yep.
Yeah, and they've got like 200,000 plus followers on the page, and they're spreading this information, you know, false information, giving people false hope, while at the same time, you know, telling everyone to love everything that's going on, be happy, you know, everything's the way it's meant to be. While at the same time, here in the northwest of England, we're about to have 7 million people fracked to death. The police are being violent, you know, and all these people are saying everything's okay as it's meant to be. And last week, this individual, I'm sorry about this, I'm still processing a lot of it myself. This individual, Sasha Stone, who's behind this new humanity movement. Hello?
Yeah, we've got you.
Sorry. Yeah, this Sasha Stone's promoting this Hope More to everyone as being great, you know, free energy device, what have you. And I look into this individual, and his closest associate is a guy who's basically a descendant of the black nobility. He boasts 5 popes in his ancestry. It's just deep. It goes. Sasha works for the UN, the United Nations, and they've been involved in all the trouble in the Ukraine, the Yulia Tymoshenko stuff. They've been taking sides on that. So I don't know, that's just everything I found. There's just a load of information, and it's just blown my mind at the depths of these people that are, you know, saying, follow this, look at this, look at this path. But within the movement, there's just as much deception as the people that we're trying to fight against. And that's all I've really got to say. Sorry, it's just, I'm just trying to piece it all together still.
Right, so basically we've got these characters that are promoting the new age. They've got an awful amount of followers on Facebook.
Yeah.
And they're promoting, they're asking for donations all the time. And it sounds as if this new energy thing is just a little bit misleading, in that they can't actually produce it. They're asking people for money for it, and you have to go through this certain individual hope to get hold of anything. And like Carl says, he's found out that they're linked to the United Nations, and that one of the guys is black nobility. So, yeah, I mean, Carl, have you got any questions for Mark on it?
Yeah, Mark. I mean, how do we stop these people? How do we get people to, you know, stop falling for this bullcrap, basically?
Well, again, discernment is required, and whenever somebody is making an extraordinary claim, you have to really look into the claim that they're making and run it through a process of filtration to make sure that it, you know, comes out as true. Many people don't do this, and because they're thinking with their emotions and they're, you know, very happy to hear about a possible solution or an alternative to the status quo, they jump right in there and often give these people a lot of their hard-earned money in the process, when they could very well be selling them something that's not really effective. I don't know enough about the particular situation or the device to make a claim one way or another as to its authenticity or its fraudulent nature. I'd have to look into it more myself, because this is really, I think I briefly heard something about it, but I haven't really looked into it that much. I saw a post on Facebook or an article on the web somewhere, but haven't really delved too deeply into looking at the claim yet. So if it does turn out to be fraudulent, I think the answer is just, you know, exposing these fraudulent claims so that more people become aware of what's trying to be peddled out there. To me, any claims of, not claims of free energy. I know free energy is possible. I know that it is possible for us to develop technology that actually uses the abundant energy that is inherent in nature itself at the unified field level. There's no question that that is possible in my mind. But the dream to manifest that within a world of slavery, to me, is a pipe dream. In other words, at some point, the system is going, if this evil system of slavery is still in existence, it is going to come and take whatever form of, quote, free energy devices anybody has built or implemented. They, you know, are not going to allow that to flourish, to take down their system. Their system is going to have to be taken down first for such technologies to flourish. It's like, it's the old adage of putting the cart before the horse. I described this in my last lecture at the Tesla Science Foundation's conference in New York City. The dream of Tesla technology coming to fruition and benefiting humanity and making all of our lives easier cannot manifest until humanity frees itself. It's not going to be the other way around, okay? It isn't going to be that the Tesla technology is invented and magically, as a result, humanity becomes free without having to delve deeper into knowledge, without having to understand natural law, without having to unchain our minds from the shackles of false religion, from the shackles of the belief in authority of man, etc., okay? All of the things that lead to freedom have to come first. And then free energy technology is the fruit or the reward that is going to make our lives easier as free people. Okay. The other way around is never going to work. It's like trying to put the cart in front of the horse and have the horse push the cart instead of pull it. I explain to people all those free energy devices are the reward that is in the cart. Okay. What the horse is the spirit of true freedom that has to usher those into our lives by an act of our will. And that's what no one wants to hear. They want to look, see, to me, how I'm beginning to see the promise of free energy as just another promise of a savior to, put your faith in that as an external solution that's going to save humanity. We have to save ourselves first by changing ourselves and our minds. And this is what no one wants to hear. No one wants to hear that that's what needs to be done, that the human mind has to be changed. And then as a result of the human mind being changed, human behavior is changed. And then as a result, there won't be any more coercive behavior toward our fellow beings or attempting to thieve things that aren't ours, like other people's property, like other people's rights, like other people's freedom, and like other people's lives, like other beings' lives. Okay. When we change ourselves and as a result, we change our behavior, that's when that state of freedom is going to be made possible. And free energy technology is not going to be possible till after that occurs. You're never going to have free energy in a state of enslavement. Just think about the oxymoron that is contained right in that statement. Within slavery, we are going to have free energy. What sense does that even make any sense? It makes zero sense. Slavery needs to be ended first before free energy can be manifested. And again, it's a very unpopular statement because people are loath to do the work of ending slavery, which is what the great work is. And how is that accomplished? That's not accomplished just by fighting physically. It may come to that, but that's accomplished by speaking the truth to others everywhere that you are at all times and all places, every moment of the day, and doing just about nothing else while in their presence if they don't already understand and if they aren't already enlightened. You can't interact with them on any other basis. Is that extremity? You better believe it. It's 100% hardcore extremity, which is what the great work involves. The great work, there's nothing balanced about doing the great work at all. The fruit of the great work is balance. The end result of the great work is balance. We're already way, 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 way out of balance, in case you haven't noticed, ladies and gentlemen. We're way out of balance. To bring balance to that is going to require extremity in the opposite polarity, which means extremity in communicating the truth to other people, whether they are ready to receive it or not. And that's what people are completely loath to do. They don't want to do that work because that is the hardest work there is to do in the world. What I'm saying is our work is to change other people's minds. Yes, obviously you can only change your own mind, but can you influence the mind of others? Yes, you can. You can't. People will say, well, yeah, you can't really make anybody think different. They have to change their mind for themselves. Yes, that's true. But can you be an influential factor in that change? Yes, you can. If you speak the truth to other people at all times and places, you can assist with that change that is taking place within them internally. And that's what the work of alchemy is. That's what the great work is. It is to assist in the change of other people by speaking the truth to them. And you know how many people know or at least have an inkling about what's going on in this world? And they're totally fearful and they're totally silent and they don't speak the truth to other people? Too many. The vast, abundant majority of the people who somewhat know what is going on make absolutely no effort to communicate that information to others. And then they start trying and they fail at first because they realize how completely in mind control other people are and how completely shut down they are to any ideas that conflict with the status quo's message of brainwashing and propaganda. And they say, oh, this is too hard to do. And they just stop. You know, and they think that's going to get it done. They think that's going to be the amount of effort that's required to make change happen in a world that is this out of balance and under mind control. Well, think again. Think again, ladies and gentlemen. It is going to take the masculine energy, the masculine dynamic of continued applied willpower and pressure to create that change. And if you don't think so, you are under the mind control of the New Age deception religion.
Well said, well said. I mean, I get very frustrated with people when I'm talking to people and it's like, oh, but this and oh, but that. And it's like, oh, for fuck's sake, cop the fuck on with you. You know, but anyway, there's a few questions come into the chat room. I've got one from Mahatma. Libby, could you please ask Mark for the etymological meaning of the word sovereign, please.
Yes, absolutely. And this is something that, again, the media is going to be picking up and trying to demonize. Okay, they're already doing it with the situation in Nevada here in the United States with the Bundy Ranch, okay, claiming that he says he is sovereign, and this is such a horrific thing, and they're trying to equate the idea of sovereignty with domestic terrorism. Now, anybody who says that they're sovereign is a terrorist, okay? That's what they're trying to propagate here in the United States media right now. This is actively going on right now, okay? And you're going to see this rhetoric ramping up more and more over time as the control system desperately tries to keep the slavery in place, human slavery in place. So here's what the word sovereign always has meant, means now, and always will mean. The definition of sovereignty is based on its origin as a word. This is not the connotative definition. This is the actual definition of sovereignty. And sovereignty only means this one thing. It does not mean anything else. It never has meant anything else, and it never will mean anything else. And unfortunately, the vast majority of human beings in the world do not understand the definition, the actual definition of the word sovereign. Okay. Here's what it means. It comes from, two Latin root words. The first is the Latin root super. Okay. It is an adverb in Latin. It means above or beyond. Okay. So if you superimpose something onto something, that means you have put it over it. You have laid it on top of something else. You are over. You are beyond. It is beyond that as far as its position on the surface of that object if you superimpose something. Okay. So super means above or beyond. Now that is the root of S-O-V-E-R in the English origin of that word. Okay. So in Latin, in ancient Latin, there was no V. Okay, so the vowel sounds are generally interchangeable when it comes to breaking down the etymology and going back to the root origin of the word. And the P or B in classical Latin was often what was used in place of the absence of the letter V in classical Latin. In modern English, we have the sound V for V. And in classical Latin, there was no such sound. You had the P or B substituting that phonetic variation. Super is actually the root of sover in English. The second part of the word is in English, reign, R-E-I-G-N is the second part of the word sovereign. And that comes from the word king in Latin, which is rex regis, okay? Rex regis in Latin, and the reign of a king is his rulership, or his dominion, or his control, okay? And that word in Latin is regnum, the rule of a king, or the rulership, the state of rulership, Okay. So the king was said to be the sovereign in the ancient world, and his rule was unchallenged and unquestioned. There was nobody above him. Nobody could give orders to the king, but the king could give orders to everybody else. So when you put these two root words together, super and regnum, what do we get? We get above or beyond, which is what super means, and then rulership or control, which is what the word regnum means. So sovereign means above rulership, above being externally controlled by another. Now, what is the state of not being ruled or controlled by someone outside of yourself, not being owned by someone else? It is the absence of the state of slavery. It means you are not someone else's slave. All the word sovereign means and ever has meant is not a slave. That's it. Super regnum, beyond the control of another, meaning you are not that person's subject. You are not that person's slave. There is nobody above us except natural law. There is no force or entity above us except the creator of the universe and the laws of the creator of the universe. That's what we are bound by. That's what we have no choice but to recognize the existence of in our lives as being binding principles of law, and then adjust our behavior accordingly such that we don't create self-inflicted suffering in our lives. But there is no one underneath of us. We do not have the right to control or command other beings either. You know, every living being in the universe is a sovereign entity. Whether they understand it or not, you do not have to understand your sovereignty. This is another big, absolutely fallacious argument, even of the so-called sovereign citizen movement or people who want to attack the problems of our world from any kind of a legal perspective. No, I do not need to even understand my sovereignty to have it be in place. That's like saying you have to understand the law of gravity for it to be in place. You don't need to understand gravity whatsoever. Sovereignty is a inherent natural condition of all the beings in creation and can never be made unso. It can never not be that condition. That is the eternal absolute nature of the consciousness of the universe is sovereignty. There is no one who is the authority over anyone else. That's the claim that you are God and that someone else is your property. And that's called slavery, ladies and gentlemen. All the word sovereign ever has meant, means now, and ever will mean is not a slave. Well, I am not a slave. I am sovereign. Not because that term can be conferred on me by anybody else, not even because I just stated it. I'm sovereign because that's the way it is and can never be any other way in nature. Because slavery is always 100% illegitimate in nature at every point in space and time. So therefore, every being is a sovereign being. Whether they understand it, know it, can speak it, can communicate it to somebody else, it doesn't make a difference. You are already sovereign. Everyone is not a slave. There is no such thing as a legitimate slave. I mean, anybody who claims that they're not sovereign or that somebody else is not sovereign, what you're saying is slavery is legitimate. You are legitimately somebody else's slave. If you claim that another being is not a sovereign being, okay, what you're making the claim of, whether you recognize it or not, and it's not, it is this way. Actually in manifestation, it is the truth that you are actually making a claim that there is legitimate rulership over your being and someone else legitimately owns you. And I'm telling you, I don't care. You can make that statement from here to eternity until you are blue in the face and have no breath left. It will never be true and it will never be legitimate. There is no such thing as legitimate slavery anywhere in creation, anywhere in the universe. So every being is a sovereign, whether they know it or not. Sovereign means not a slave, and there is no such thing as any time or place as somebody not being a sovereign being in the universe. Get over it, get used to it, deal with it. You're sovereign, so is everybody else. It doesn't make a difference whether you even understand it or know it or not. That's the eternal truth of the universe.
Right, well, your parents were right to call you passionate, weren't they?
My name means passionate warrior. And my parents didn't know that. That's called synchro mysticism. That's called the universal truth coming into the human world through seemingly chance decisions made by human beings.
Yeah, absolutely.
The universe speaking to us at all times and places. You know, my parents didn't do that consciously, but did it work out the way it should have? Yes, it did. Absolutely. They say, what's in a name? And I will respond, in many cases, a whole lot.
William. I mean, my parents called me Elizabeth, but when I was learning to speak, it got translated down as Libby, hence the Libby. And then I later found out that Libby means love in many languages and peace in some languages. So,
and freedom. You know, from liber in Latin. Your name is really derived from the Latin liber, which means simultaneously book and free, not a slave. The word liber in Latin is the same as sovereign in English, literally. It means not a slave, free, a free being. And they equated that with the word book. They didn't have a different word for free and book in ancient Latin. Think about how significant that is, that they considered knowledge so important, book knowledge so important, that there was no different word in Latin for book and free. Now, if that's not significance in words, I don't know what is.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm just proud that became my name. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So it's good.
Right. It's the basis of liberty, you know.
I'm going to put on a tune and we'll have a couple of minutes to go to the loo or whatever. And then we'll come back and we'll talk about natural law. Okay, so this tune, Mike, if you're listening, this is in honor to you for doing my my jingle. This is Bliss by Syntax, and I just find the words in this song very, very relevant. So listen to the lyrics in this song, people, because they're important. So let's take it away. This is Bliss by Syntax. Welcome back to the Hippie Punk Show. This is the Nail It to a Cross Day Easter special, and I've got with me Mark Passio. I'm not sure if Carl Cunningham's still with us or not, but welcome everybody and happy Easter, or Estra, or however you want to celebrate it. Personally, I'll call Sunday Chocolate Day. Right, Mark, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back.
That's okay. Right, let's get into natural law. First of all, I'd like to explore some of the natural laws with you and how people can actually implement them into their lives. So what would you suggest is the first natural law that people can start implementing to try and make things better for themselves and people around them?
Well, I would say ultimately there is only one natural law. And to do that, I'd like to go on a kind of roundabout way of getting there so that we can understand that there's really only one law within creation for all intelligent life within creation, or I should even say all beings that are gifted with the capacity for holistic intelligence. And that should delineate between a simply sentient being versus a being that has the capacity for true intelligence, or what I would call holistic intelligence, both intellect and creative intelligence. So, and that's really where the word intelligence comes from. It comes from intellect plus G-E-N-C-E in English, gens. In the first part of intelligence in English, intella, refers to the intellect. And then the second part, gens, refers to the creative aspect of the intelligence, which is the right brain hemisphere, the nurturing, the compassion, the intuition, the creativity. Without all of those qualities present, there's no real intelligence, and you just have intellect without compassion, which is essentially a left brain imbalance and a form of psychopathy. So the beings that have a true capacity for holistic intelligence, such as human beings, are bound by the principles of natural law. Okay. And what natural law is if we just simply define the words individually, the word natural means that it is inherent to creation. It is not made or caused by humankind or any three-dimensional beings for that matter. It is not put into effect by the beings within creation. It is inherent to creation itself. So these laws are already there, already present, and have been present since the universe has existed. Okay. Whatever length of or expanse of time you happen to think that that is, gravity has always existed as long as the universe has existed. The term I'm calling natural law, or you could call it moral law, you could call it karmic law, you could call it God's law, you could call it the laws of cause and effect, you could call it the laws of attraction. It doesn't make a difference what label you slap on it. It's all talking about the same thing. Inherent laws in reality, in creation, that are not made or caused by humankind and which bind our behavior. We are bound by these existing conditions. That's the definition of a law, okay? The word law means an existing condition that is binding and immutable, okay? It means it exists, it is extant in the universe, it is binding, it has an effect upon you, whether you understand it or not, whether you know about its existence or not, you are still bound by it. And it is immutable. That means it can never be changed by anything that we are capable of doing. That's what the word immutable means. Cannot be changed. It is fixed. These are the fixed laws of creation. Okay. And what do they do? So these fixed laws of creation that we are bound by, whether we are consciously aware of their existence or not, they do something. They govern the consequences of the behavioral free will choices that we make in our daily lives when we act toward others. Any actions that we perform toward others have consequences that are determined, that are governed by natural law. And the first problem with the people encounter with this is, one, they don't understand what I mean by the term natural, that it has nothing whatsoever to do with any Darwinian concept whatsoever. Okay. This is the antithesis of Darwinian macrobiological evolutionary theory and the ideology of survival of the fittest / survival of the most ruthless. That has nothing whatsoever to do with these laws of nature. As a matter of fact, those Darwinian notions aren't the laws of nature either. It's just that many people have propagated them as a religion and many people have bought into that religion. And I will tell you what the name of that religion is. It's called Satanism. Satanism is the religion that propagates the survival of the most ruthless as being the way that humans should conduct their lives, simply because in many animals and their ways of living in nature, that's how an animalistic being without intelligence conducts their existence. And therefore, because we see an animal doing it, we want to ascribe humanity as just being some other animal with no greater complexity of intelligence and consciousness than that being, that animal. And therefore, we should apply our ways of conducting ourselves to the way they conduct themselves, or I should say the way they conduct themselves to the way we should conduct ourselves. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's a great idea. What a wonderful idea. I think it'll work out so well. Don't you think it has worked out so well, applying the Darwinian concept of macrobiological natural selection and that idea of evolutionary development, which is the survival of the most ruthless? We should apply that in social Darwinistic terms of the human kingdom. It just creates such wonderful things, don't you know? It's just evident, just you look all around you at what a wonderful job the social engineers have done in getting people to accept that nonsense and then apply that in their lives. And as a result, look at how much order and peace and wonderful harmony it's created in our lives. It's worked so well. I can't even tell people how well it has worked. Please continue to think that way, because it's working out so well for humanity. You know, it's just utter ridiculous nonsense is what this whole ideology is. And the antithesis of that ideology is what I'm talking about as natural law. That true evolutionary progress in consciousness is determined by how moral an intelligent species is. You don't evolve by being more and more ruthless. That's how you devolve. That's how you descend into greater and greater chaos and entropy in society. That's how natural law works. Okay. There's a law called the law of freedom. And there's one way of either obeying it or disobeying it, which is the ultimate one law of all natural law. But you could look at one of the natural laws, as there is a law that actually governs how much freedom a species has or does not have within any given society. Any group of people have in any given society, I should say. And this law of freedom is, as the aggregate quality of behavior within that society becomes more moral, the society in the aggregate becomes more free. I'll say that again. As the aggregate quality of behavior within any given society becomes more moral, that entire society in the aggregate becomes more free as a people. Conversely, as an entire society in the aggregate, the quality of their behavior becomes more immoral, that entire society in the aggregate becomes more enslaved. The law of freedom. Morality is directly proportional to freedom. Freedom is directly proportional to morality, and they can never be separated from each other. Those two qualities are inextricably interconnected and can never be untwined from each other. Conversely, immorality is proportional to slavery, and slavery is proportional to the immorality of the aggregate behavior of any given society. That this is how natural law works. Natural law is the body of universal spiritual laws, which is what the word natural actually means. See, people have hijacked. Social engineers and mind controllers have hijacked the meaning of the word natural. They want you to get you to think it means Darwinistic, when in fact it means nothing of the sort. The word natural comes from the Egyptian and the Middle Eastern and Far Eastern suffix al. The Egyptian word neter in ancient Egyptian meant spirit or God. And then al is an ancient Middle Eastern and Eastern suffix that means of or related to or having to do with, connected with, connected to. Okay. So when you put them together, neter al, natural, natural means connected with spirit, having to do with things of a spiritual nature. Okay. Having to do with God and the laws of God. That's what natural means by its very etymological definition. And people think it means having to do with how animals conduct themselves as beasts in the field. And then thinking that somehow that's order. That isn't order. That's chaos. If we apply our behavior as truly holistically, or beings that have the capacity for holistic intelligence, to animals that do not have the capacity for holistic intelligence, we are demeaning our very nature, and we are taking up a pattern of behavior that can only lead to more and more chaos and enslavement. Every person out there who believes in Darwinism, and most of all the people who believe that this flawed evolutionary theory of Darwinism should somehow be applied to human conduct in the form of social Darwinism, is actively promoting the very force that creates more chaos, disorder, and slavery in any given society, whether they know it or not. And most people don't know that, and that's why they're continuing to contribute to chaos and enslavement, unknowingly, in their unconsciousness. So what natural law is a universal spiritual body of laws that exists everywhere in creation at all times and at all places. And these laws act as the deterministic principles in creation that govern the dynamics of consciousness, of intelligent beings, of beings that have been gifted with the capacity for true holistic intelligence. That doesn't mean those beings have to be displaying that capacity or actively in the full embrace of that capacity. They have the capacity for true intelligence as we do as human beings. Therefore, we are bound by natural law. And therefore, an animal that eats another animal because their nature is different than our nature, these forms of law do not apply to other kingdoms, other species that do not have true holistic intelligence, the capacity for true holistic intelligence. So when people say, well, when you're talking about natural law, aren't you referring to the law of the jungle as animals live by? No, I am not. I am referring to the laws of morality. Okay. Therefore, they do not apply to a lion going after a gazelle in the wild on the plains of Africa. A lion doesn't have the gift, isn't gifted with the complexity in consciousness for the capacity for true holistic intelligence, which is logic, reason, morality, compassion, intuition, nurturing, etc., scientific thought. Animals don't have any of those qualities of thought. So why would the same laws of consciousness apply to their form of consciousness? Of course it doesn't. We're not the same thing as them. And this is what Satanism does. Satanism says, no, we are just the same thing as them. We are just as other animals living as beasts in the field. That's one of the main tenets of Satanism. You just read into Satanism and you will find that is one of their main tenets, that human beings are no different than any other animal. Well, yes, we are different than every other animal because we have the capacity for true holistic intelligence. All this is social Darwinism. And it is one of the main tenets, one of the main four ideological tenets of the satanic religion. And if you are actively believing in this ideology, you have fallen for Satanism. I'm not telling you, I'm not asking you to believe that. You can believe whatever the hell you want to believe. I'm telling you that's one of the tenets of Satanism. As a priest within that religion, I'm telling you that's one of its main tenets, is this belief in social Darwinism. And many people are trapped here. Many of our own family members and friends are trapped in this religion. So natural law governs the quality of behavior that we output into the universe through our free will. As such, natural law is the deterministic component within all of creation. It can never be changed. It is fixed. It works a certain way, flawlessly, 100% of the time, absolutely, and can never not function that way. It is a 100% flawless computer program that is running in nature, just like gravity is a 100% flawless computer program that is operating in nature. It is no different than the seen laws of physical dynamics, okay, except it applies to behavior. And yes, go ahead.
How would you explain then, you know, when people say when you want something with all your heart and soul, then the universe will give it to you. How can people apply that into their lives?
Say it's not how the laws of attraction work. It's a bastardization and a fundamental watering down of the true laws of attraction. And this is what the New Age does, because what the New Age wants to leave out is willpower. The New Age wants to leave out hard work. The New Age wants to leave out right action. The New Age wants to leave out true and total moral responsibility at all times and places for all individuals. The New Age doesn't want to talk about any of those things. Okay. And largely what it's leaving out is free will, the dynamic interaction of free will with natural law. So what they're emphasizing is the thought and emotion aspect of it. But when it comes to the masculine component of action, they're magically leaving that out of the laws of attraction. The laws of attraction do not work by wishing something and feeling an emotion in the body, and then magically the universe will grant you that. The universe will grant you that when you've developed real holistic unity consciousness with all of the aspects of consciousness, which is thought, emotion, and action. When we think, feel, and act in accordance, in harmony, with no contradiction between those three modes of behavior, of consciousness, then the universe will grant us what we want. But not until we employ the all-important modality of action for the things that we say we want in our lives through our thoughts, and then feel should be this way through our emotions. Well, thinking it and feeling it doesn't getting it done. Thinking it, feeling it, and then acting upon it is what ultimately gets it manifested in the world. See, that's why, how could they possibly leave the very thing that brings all manifested realities into manifestation? Action, behavior does that. Thoughts lead to that. Thoughts and emotions lead to that, but ultimately what gets it done is behavior. And the New Age movement is leaving out of the laws of attraction and manifestation the most important aspect of manifestation, which is action, the masculine component of consciousness. It is a total farce and an absolute deception. The New Age variant of the laws of attraction, as they are being taught by New Agers. And the reason they do this, Libby, is because they are telling people what they want to hear, instead of telling them the truth. Telling people what they want to hear, you know what that does? That makes people love you. That makes them like you. I'm telling you a bunch of nonsense bullshit that you want to hear. Well, you're going to respond and say, oh, what a nice guy. This guy's telling, yeah, I thought that all along. He's telling me what I want to hear. Wow, this is going to be easy, you know? And you buy into all that nonsense, and then this person makes a killing. They clean up on selling you what you want to hear, the easy way. They're selling you the softball approach. They're not telling you, you know what? This isn't what the laws of attraction are. The laws of attraction work way more hardcore than all that. And you're going to have to get actively involved if you want to bring what you want into manifestation. Hey, you could say you want truth. You could say you want freedom. You could say you want peace. You could say you want prosperity, but you're not going to create any of those things until your thoughts, emotions, and most importantly, your actions are all aligned with each other in true non-contradiction, which is what true unity consciousness is all about. And the New Age will never tell anybody that, because they'd rather blow smoke up people's asses to make a killing on their lecture circuit and all the books that they sell, instead of telling people the hardcore, uncomfortable truth that the reason we're continuing to receive the things we don't want is because of the actions we continue to take that we have no right to take. And this is how natural law, the real laws of attraction, functions to bring us the experience that we're undergoing in our lives, in conjunction with our free will to choose between moral behavior and immoral behavior. And the New Age movement won't touch that. It won't touch it with a 2,000-foot pole, because their profits would dry up. That's the truth. Their profits would dry up because they'd no longer be telling people what they want to hear and blowing smoke up their ass and telling them that the world is just such a wonderful place and it's exactly as it should be. And these fake variants of the laws of attraction are just going to work for you if only you feel the emotion in your physiology and hold the thought in your intention. Utter nonsense. The real laws of attraction work through free will decisions that have to do with moral behavior versus immoral behavior. And then we receive invariably unalterable consequences as a result of those decision-making processes through free will. So free will is the randomized component that we are gifted with in order to choose between the behaviors that ultimately have boundary conditions set for them by nature, called natural law, the deterministic component of creation. These two components of creation are actively at work at all times, at all places. Natural law, the deterministic component, and free will, the randomized component. They do a dynamic interplay with each other, these two forms of creative energies in the universe. And what happens is we choose through our free will behavior, then that goes out into the universe, and then natural law says, was that the dynamic of natural law mirrors back to us what we have just put out into the universe through our free will and our behavior to choose between right and wrong. It says, was that an action that was moral? Well, then here you go, have some more freedom. Was that behavior immoral? Well, here you go, have some more enslavement. And when we do this as a society, we produce the result that we all experience in the aggregate as a total society and as a whole species eventually. That's how natural law functions.
So how would you describe, does self-care come into it? And how would you describe self-care and how do people implement that?
Yes. Care with a capital C is much different than what you would call care with a lowercase c, okay? It isn't like, oh, I care about that this show is going to be on television tonight, so I'm going to make sure I get there and have it on in time and watch it. Mm-hmm. That's not what I mean by the dynamic of care. The true quality of care embraces even more than things like familial, love and association. Like, I care about my mother, I care about my sister, I care about my brother, I care about my aunt or uncle. Okay. It's not familial love either. True care is what in the ancient mystery traditions of Greece would have been referred to as the quality of agape. Agape in Greek means love or care. And it's universal love. It's universal care. It's not romantic love. It's not even familial love or platonic friendship love. It is overarching universal care, meaning you've pulled back from your own immediate situation. You've pulled back from just what I want in my life. Oh, I care about how much money I make. I care about, you know, what kind of car I drive. I care about what kind of house I live in. We're not talking about those desires as care. care with a capital C encompasses, do you care about what's going on in the world? Do you care about other people's level of consciousness? Do you care about your own level of consciousness? Do you care about whether your behavior is in harmony with morality? Do you care about whether other people's behavior is in harmony with morality? Do you care about the overall dynamic of freedom versus slavery that is playing out in our world right in front of our eyes? Are you going to get actively involved to take right action when it comes to that dynamic? That's what real care is all about. And the problem is so few people are in the consciousness of true care, care with a capital C, that we don't have the numbers right now to make a dent and to really change the level of consciousness that's going on a massive scale. We need a whole lot more people. If this dynamic is going to be changed at a much more fundamental level and in a faster sense, we need a whole lot more people developing this dynamic of true care, of pulling back and expanding their awareness and seeing the big picture of what's going on in this world regarding human freedom and how deep into slavery and bondage the human species is. When we pull back and see that from a global or an even bigger universal perspective, okay, when it comes to the laws of nature, when it comes to natural law having to do with morality, then we're developing the quality called true care, care with a capital C. And that is what the ancients referred to as the generative principle. True care drives the overall dynamic of creation, of what happens to you in the aggregate sense, of what happens to a whole species, not just what happens to you individually in your life, but what happens to an entire race of beings, an entire species of beings. This is why it was placed in the middle, the G in the middle of the compasses and square in Freemasonry. It's why it was placed in the middle of that symbol that stands for the generative principle in Illuminized Freemasonry. High-level Freemasons are taught that what that G ultimately represents is the generative principle. But even in those traditions, even in those levels of Freemasonry, they'll tell you it means the generative principle, but they'll often leave out what that means, that actually represents the heart in the true sense of the overall spiritual dynamic of care with a capital C. That G actually, the generative principle is care, all capital letters. Distinguish it from trivial care or platonic care or familial care or romantic care, love. Okay, you have to distinguish it from those forms of emotion. Universal care, care with all capital letters, okay, for lack of a better term, agape care in Greek, from the Greek mystery traditions. The generative principle was that form of care. And they will often tell people that it means the generative principle, the principle of creation, or in other words, the laws that underlie creation, which is what the laws of attraction ultimately are. If we care enough about what's going on in that wider sense and enough about the moral qualities of our behavior, okay, that's putting real care into manifestation. And as a result, we are generating the result that we receive, that we are receiving in a conscious way. If we don't employ true care, we're running on an unconscious way of creating, co-creating reality. See, either way, we're still co-creating the reality in conjunction with these laws through our free will and then choosing a behavior, and then we receive the consequences. When we have the dynamic of true care active within us, we then understand how the laws of morality work, and we are in an empowered position to co-create our reality intelligently, wisely, consciously, as opposed to unwisely and unconsciously. So that is what the dynamic of real care is about. And again, the original esoteric Freemasonic tradition actually encoded that into the middle of the compasses and square symbol of Freemasonry as the capital G, standing for the generative principle.
How does and what relevance does sacred geometry have with this, and how can it be utilized to help people?
I think sacred geometry is a resonator when it comes to simple form and archetype. Everything that we that exists in reality comes down to archetype of some kind, comes down to a basic universal form. That's what sacred geometry essentially is an expression of, the underlying form that underlies all of nature. Okay. This is a sacred geometry can describe anything from how universal laws function to, structure of space and time. Okay. It ultimately is the fabric of what everything is built from. archetypal, pure energy. And there's sacred geometry that has often been used in conjunction with the teachings of the mystery traditions surrounding natural law and how these laws function. I think one of the my personal favorite pieces of sacred geometry that resonates with me and my teaching is what is known as the seed of life. It is the basis, the fundamental pattern that acts as the basis for the sacred geometrical symbol known as the flower of life. But it is the very heart of the flower of life, the central circle of the flower of life, plus the six circles that are immediately surrounding the central circle. As such, that shape is known as the seed of life. But to truly complete the seed of life, you have to place one large circle around those seven circles, the central, one small central circle, and the other six small surrounding circles that surround it like a six-petaled flower. That six-petaled flower represents the heart chakra. It also, these seven symbols also represent the principles that underlie natural law, which have often been called the Hermetic tradition principles, the Hermetic principles. And when we put the large circle around all of them, that is the boundary condition of natural law, and it ultimately represents the generative principle of true care surrounding the other seven Hermetic principles. This symbol called the seed of life, you'll see it in my presentation on natural law, where I talk about the eighth and lost principle. So that contains sacred geometry in that section. And if people want an example of it, that's where I really recommend them to go. And there's also many other great works on sacred geometry out on the internet. You could just, you know, search it. It's a whole huge field unto itself. But again, what I would say it really has to do with is resonance and form underlying everything. Everything is a form of pure vibratory energy. That is one of the main principles of natural law, the law of vibration. And again, I think the seed of life is a very good sacred geometrical symbol to start insofar as breaking down what some of these sacred geometrical symbols have been used in different mystery traditions to symbolically represent.
Okay, cool. So say with crystals and numerology and rituals, are there any rituals that people can do to reverse negativity?
I would say the best way of reversing any negativity is not engaging in some sort of a ritualistic or other form of spiritual practice, but the best way is to stand in the power of truth and align your actions with morally right behavior. When we do that and then we propagate that by being an example of that, and then we speak that to others, that is the greatest form of protection. It is a shield that no form of evil or negativity can ultimately penetrate or conquer. That's why people ask me, aren't you afraid? Aren't you? You're coming out so openly and, you know, in a very straightforward way, vehemently attacking this system of slavery. Aren't you afraid of consequences? No, I'm afraid of consequences for not doing this. That's the real answer. Okay. I'll take the whatever consequences could possibly occur to me in the physical domain and continue to do what I'm doing now, which is standing in the force of right and truth, I'll take any of those consequences that could possibly happen without any fear whatsoever, because there would be much greater repercussions if I knew what I knew and did nothing. Absolutely. So I tell people, you want to erect a shield of protection around yourself, understand natural law, speak it to others, and live it in every moment of your lives. And then the universe will come to your assistance in ways you never even dreamed possible.
I agree with you. Totally agree with you. Right. Let's have a quick chat about right versus wrong then.
Sure.
How does that work?
People ask all the time, well, how do I know the difference between right and wrong? Can that be definitively known? And the answer is yes, absolutely, it can be definitively known. And the absolute miracle or tragedy, however you want to look at it, is that so few people really deeply, truly, and definitively know the difference between right and wrong. You know, I often joke, I can't even believe that I need to go up on stage or on interviews and even explain the objective difference between right and wrong to other human beings. It's almost preposterous that I should have to do this or that anybody should have to do this. This should be common sense knowledge. So a deep understanding of morality lies at the very heart of natural law. Okay. The morality means the underlying principles concerning the distinction between right and wrong. That's what natural law has to do with morality. Okay. So when we talk about right, when we say the word right, we are saying simultaneously correct and moral. There's no different word in English to represent those concepts. See, right simultaneously means if you say, what is the answer in arithmetic to 2 + 2? It is 4. That is correct. You are right. That is an answer that is based in truth. That is the truth regarding that answer. In an arithmetic calculation, okay, 2 + 2 = 4. There is no other answer to that problem. Okay? That is the truth. It is the correct answer. Okay? Now, simultaneously, we use the word right in referring to moral behavior. Was what you just did there regarding that other human being, was that right? Was it moral? Did you have a right to do that behavior? Well, if it is in harmony with natural law, it is moral. And what an action being in harmony with natural law means is that when you take that action, the result of that behavior, the consequence that was carried out by that action, by that behavior, means it did not result in harm to another being. When you took the behavior, when you took the action in the world, harm does not result to another being, to any other being. If harm does not result, demonstrable harm, okay? Did you harm the physical body of another being? Did you take the life of another being? Did you take the property of another being? Did you take the rights of another being? Did you take the freedom of another being? All things you have no right to just go forward and take, okay? If that was not done, then the action is a right. That is a negative definition for a right, because you're saying it is an action that does not do a certain thing, which is to create harm. It does not create harm to other beings. Conversely, wrong is the opposite of that. And when we say the word wrong in English, we mean both incorrect, meaning not based in truth. 2 + 2 in arithmetic is not 3. Therefore, if you gave that answer, you would be wrong. You would be incorrect. That is not true. It is not the truth that 2 + 2 = 3. Okay? Wrong also means immoral when it comes to behavior. It means it is in opposition to natural law, in opposition to the laws of morality. Meaning when you took that action and you put that forward into the physically manifested world, when you did that to another being, it resulted in harm to another being, period. Okay? So actions that are based in wrong always result in harm to another being. Now, to know the difference between these means what you have to do is understand which actions cause harm. Because again, we've affirmatively defined wrong. It's an action that does cause harm to other beings. And we've negatively defined right, an action that does not cause harm to other beings. Therefore, what we ultimately need to know definitively, objectively, 100% absolutely, to know what right and wrong actually are, is we need to know what wrongdoings are. Because in both of those definitions, we gave the definition that it either does or does not cause harm. So then what needs to be definitively known is what actions, what behaviors, when we take them in regards to other beings, cause harm to other beings. And it's actually a very short list. And to many people's surprise, if you really boil it down, there's only one action that you could ever do to another being to cause harm to them. Only one action. Only one behavior is a breaking of all natural law, of all moral law. And I'll get to that. So right, what I'm saying here is that rights cannot truly be understood when you try to define them in the positive. We could try to list rights from now to eternity until we're blue in the face, okay? You'll never be able to write down what all your rights are. You have an infinite number of rights. There's an infinite number of things that you could possibly do that do not result in harm to other beings. But there is a very, 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 very short list of actions that if you take will result in harm to other beings. And every one of those actions is a form of theft, as we'll get to. These actions are these natural law transgressions or harmful behaviors that we understand, okay, because they cause harm to another being, and therefore we understand that they are not rights, they are wrongdoings. Here's the list: murder, assault, rape, theft, trespass, and coercion. Murder, assault, rape, theft, trespass, and coercion. I would probably add lying, willfully lying deliberately to another person and put that on that list. So you could say murder, assault, rape, theft, trespass, coercion, and willful lying, willful conscious lying. Okay. In every one of these instances, this short list of wrongdoings, I challenge somebody to come up with a different form of wrongdoing. Okay. You defraud somebody and steal money or, you know, somehow, funnel money away from somebody in a way that you had no right to do. You embezzle money. Okay. That's theft. Okay. You name the wrongdoing. Okay. It is taking something from someone else that you had no right to take, that did not, was not your property. So every form of wrongdoing is a theft in some way, a theft of some other being's property. So all rights are property rights. Everything that you have a right to do, you have that right because what you are doing it in regards to is your property. Okay. So let's get into this. Murder. Is murder a form of theft? Well, what are you doing if you murder someone? You are unjustly and unlawfully taking the life of another being. You have snuffed out a life that did not belong to you. That's not your life. That's not your expression of consciousness. That's that other being's expression of consciousness. So all forms of murder are, of course, wrongdoings and harm, are transgressions against natural law. So murder is a form of theft. Is assault? Is assaulting another person, you have absolutely no right to attack them. Aggressively attacking another human being when they did not actually do any harm to another being, okay? And they were only acting within their rights. Is that a form of theft? Yes, it is. What did you steal? What did you take that wasn't yours? You stole someone else's bodily well-being, that they have a right to exist unharmed and unaccosted and unaggressed against in their property called their body, their physical vehicle, for the expression of their consciousness. Rape, is that a form of theft? What do you steal if you rape someone else? You steal their free will to sexually associate with whom they choose to sexually associate with. Okay? So have you stolen something? Yes, through coercion and violence. You've stolen. These are all forms of coercion and violence. And ultimately, when we boil it down, they're all forms of theft. Theft, physical theft. You're taking someone else's property. I have a hard drive right here on my desk. If somebody just, I'm using it. I store information on it. If someone walked in here and just took this external hard drive and walked out of here with it and said, that's mine now, that's called theft because that's my lawful property that I acquired lawfully without harming anybody else. My information is on it. I'm actively using it. I'm responsible for it and actively employing its usage. Therefore, that's my property. That's the definition of what makes it my property. Okay. If someone came and took it without any right, that of course is a wrongdoing. It's called theft. Trespass. Is that a form of theft? What are you stealing if you just barge into somebody else's home in the middle of the night? That's called trespassing. Well, you're taking their security to live unaccosted in their own lair and not have strangers just, you know, barge in where they're actively living and conducting their daily, you know, life. Okay. That's somebody's property for a reason. Their stuff is there. They're living there with their family. They're conducting their life business there. They're sleeping there. They're eating there. It's actively being used. It's a space set aside for the usage of a particular human being or group of human beings. That's lawful property. Okay. You have no right to just go and barge in somebody else's property. Okay. Trespass would be stealing someone's security in their own living space. Coercion. Is that a form of theft? Yes. What are you stealing when you coerce somebody and try to conform their will to your will, their behavior to your will? That's called coercion. Coercion is the theft of free will. And that's what this is all ultimately about. Free will is being thieved from human beings through coercion, through this monopoly on violence called government, you know, a violent institution, you know, trying to say that they're a monopoly on force. That's the other thing that natural law is all about, the distinguishment between force and violence, which aren't the same thing. They're the opposite. But to go back to these natural law transgressions, they're all a form of theft. So every harmful action that it is capable, a human being is capable of taking is a form of theft because all rights are property rights. And whenever a wrongdoing is committed, some form of property is always being stolen. Yeah, whether it is a being's life, a being's rights, a being's physical property, or a being's freedom, or a being's free will. You're always stealing something. When you willfully lie to somebody, you are depriving them of understanding the truth, which is information that they use to make accurate decisions, through their decision-making processes, and then they base their behavior on it. So lying is also a form of theft, willfully lying to another. Every form of wrongdoing is a form of theft for there to be a wrongdoing that has been taken place. In other words, for there to be a harm in existence, there has to be a violation of natural law, meaning a wrongdoing has taken place because someone has taken an action that steals something that doesn't belong to them from someone else. So the ultimate question to know the difference between right and wrong is, I'm doing this action in relationship to another being. Is what I'm doing in relationship to that other being something that I have a right to do because I am doing it to my property, or is it something that I am doing to their property, and as such, I have no right to take that behavior? So let's ask a question. Let's say a cop has been given an order to anybody that is handing out any information to make them stop handing out that information. They're being told, you may not communicate to another human being through words on a written piece of paper or by speaking information to them. And I've been given this order by my commanding officer in the police and the politicians who command them. And they've told me, you can't hand this out here. Okay. Is that something that they have a right to do? Do you have a right to control someone's freedom of speech? Well, this is why the founders of this country attempted to enshrine freedom of speech in the very First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, which was a guarantee that the government has never and ever can be given any such quote unquote right. Okay. And
we just had a question come into
sure,
the chat room.
Sure.
How does being cruel to be kind come into this? And they're having a whole debate on whether you can put an animal down and is if it's in pain and suffering, and is that right or is that wrong or tough love? Yeah, how does that all come into it?
Tough love and euthanasia, I would both say, are not really active forms of moral law transgression. Tough love is actually very necessary and morally right based on where we're at. See, the house is burning down, everyone, in case you haven't been paying attention and noticed that. Our house is burning down. We're burning our own home down with us in it, okay? That's no time to sit there and be namby-pamby about things. That's no time to be timid. That's when you got to get up in somebody else's face and say, hey, in case you haven't noticed, you're burning our house down. You're a person who's actively involved in burning it down. And I'm not going to just sit back and say, oh, let me be so nice to you. Nah. No, it's called get up in somebody's face. Because what they're doing isn't right, and they have no right to do it, okay? So tough love, I don't see anything wrong with that. As long as you know you're in the right, as long as you know you're speaking the truth can do no harm, ladies and gentlemen. If someone is perceiving it as offensive, that's not your problem. That's their problem. The truth remains the truth no matter who it offends. The truth remains the truth no matter how it is spoken. The truth remains the truth whether anybody understands it or not. We have to get over this emotional mind control technique that has been so absolutely well employed and effectively employed against the human population, that they believe that somehow truth only speaks in sweet, pleasing tones. You know what? At the time we're living in, that's how deception talks to people.
Yeah,
it, deception doesn't scream in somebody's ear because it wants to play on this emotional dynamic of people thinking, well, if someone something sounds so lovely and beautiful because it's been spoken to us in such sweet, pleasing tones, then it must be true. No, deceivers want to speak to you in those tones. They don't want to speak to you passionately. They don't want to explain to you the moral imperative of changing your behavior. No. They don't want to talk to you straight and streetwise with no nonsense and no bullshit approach. No, they want to deceive you by telling you what you want to hear and dressing up in a whole bunch of fluff and nonsense so that you'll swallow their poison pill. That's what the New Age movement's all about. Telling you exactly what you want to hear, even though it's a whole crock of horse crap. Okay? That's exactly why they give it to you in those very, very muted and sweet, pleasant tones. Okay. You want to be on the lookout and on guard for people to teach like that. When you hear somebody giving you tough love because the situation demands it, there's no time left to sugarcoat this. There's no time left to baby spoon it to people all mushed up and blended up in a blender and given to them on a tiny little baby spoon. You had time for that thousands of years ago. That time's long since passed, ladies and gentlemen. The house is burning down. And when the house is burning down, you don't walk into the kitchen when there's children in the house and go start making flapjacks. You don't start going making pancakes with some syrup and, you know, and a glass of milk. That's not what you do when the house is burning down. When the house is burning down, you explain to somebody the moral imperative of forgetting everything else, and you need to get out of that situation. You need to do what you need to do to get out of that situation if you want to survive.
Absolutely. Right. I think we're going to have to wrap it up there. We're almost out of time. So, but what a brilliant, brilliant speaker you are, Mark. Thank you.
I'm just trying to do what I'm charged to do and put the truth out there in a very straightforward, streetwise, and unapologetic way to people. I personally want to treat other people as adults and not children. If you're an adult, you're going to hear the truth in what I've just laid out here. That's all it really comes down to, and I think people should take a no-nonsense approach like that. I think the reason we're in the situation that we're in right now is because too many people have failed to do just that, and they want to sugarcoat things and sweet-talk people, and they don't want to explain to people exactly what is going on just as it is. And that's how people need to hear this, as far as I'm concerned. And as a result, I have no intention of changing my approach. If anything, I have every intention of ramping it up to even more intensity.
Yeah, you go for it, mate. You go for it. I think it's brilliant. Right, one last question. Give me a yes or no. Are we all one?
Absolutely, we are. There is no real separation at a fundamental level. Everything in creation is one energy. It is one ultimate mind. And the problem is, some people have actually remembered that, and very many people continue to forget that and have failed to remember it as yet. So this is all about reconciliation, ultimately, in the long term, and at the very bottom line, fundamental level. This is about ultimately coming together. But what we need to come together in the spirit of is truth. Truth is what needs to unite us. And the truth that we need to be united with is the objective difference between right and wrong behavior. That's what the common ground needs to be. That's called common sense or conscience. And unfortunately, it has been lost to the great many human beings that are living on this planet right now. But if we, as the people who have remembered that great common sense information of conscience, do our job, we will speak the truth to others, and they will start reintegrating that lost knowledge into themselves once again.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Everybody in the chat room is bigging you up. They're all agreeing with everything you said. And thank you very, very much for coming on.
Libby, I want to thank you very much for what you do, because people like you who are putting information like this forward yourself and bringing on guests to share information like this are doing the great work. We need more people like yourself. We need more people speaking this truth to people out there so that it can propagate and resonate with more people. So thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been an honor. So if we've got time, I've done a mix for people. It's a very uplifting mix. I don't know if we're going to have time before we run into the next show, which I think is Steve with Cancel the Cabal. But thank you ever so much, everybody, for listening and getting involved in the chat room. Thanks to Mark. Thanks to Mike for doing me a jingle. And thank you, everybody, for taking part and getting involved. And keep speaking the truth and get off your asses and do something. There we go. Keep it hippie, keep it punk, and hopefully we'll have a tune for you, which is actually, by the way, a mix I did. I should just say who it is. It's Prida by Laika mixed up with Sasha's remix of Hot Chip.